Hello, how the heck are you? Oh, look at that. Some of you actually answered me. How sweet. Anyway, this is the Failing Writers Podcast, and I just wanted to mention that later in this episode, there's a couple of swear words. I mean, there's quite a few swear words, actually. Well, it's mostly swearing, to be honest. So I'm just pre-warning you. I'll warn you again later when it's about to start, so you've got time to lock the kids in the shed. You know, for their well-being and that.
So, here we go again.
Here we go. And this is good. This is our revenge week, Dave, where we actually get John to review a book for once.
Yes.
Rather than him bullying us into having to review.
Exactly.
Stuff.
If anyone remembers, some have books foisted upon them. And that was me and Tom. Whereas John is the foister.
You foisty bastard. You
know, I am quite foisty.
So today, he gets his just desoits.
Yes.
So John, should we ask the usual question first?
Oh, go on then.
Before we go into that, has anyone written anything this week?
I can answer that really quickly. Do you want me to go first?
Yep.
Because that's a very quick answer for me. No, absolutely nothing. I've been on holiday though, so I've got a good excuse. What about you, Bertie?
No. I've got COVID, so I've got quite a good excuse as well. So
right, look, guys, I don't want to be that guy, but if we're going to do this, and we are, the point of the podcast is that we actually do spend some time writing rather than just not. You can't just come back every week and just not have done anything.
Well, I had, but I haven't this time.
Yeah. You
know. What have you done, Tom?
Well, I haven't done anything.
Well, there we go. Have you got an excuse? Have you got a decent excuse?
I didn't. I thought, well, obviously, with John being on holiday, and I thought you might get COVID, and I didn't want to be I didn't want to be upsetting an apple cart. Do you know what I mean? I just wanted to.
Yeah.
That's really decent. So,
thank you. I did want to get writing as well, but I thought, no, come on, we're a team.
It's just a bit unfair.
Yeah.
That's great.
Fail together.
Yeah, I thought about writing.
Yeah.
Because we talked about the, and I can never, I don't know how you say it because it's a weird acronym, isn't it, of the Narira Roll. You know the Narira Roll?
No. What's the Narira Roll?
What's Narira Roll? In November, you're meant to write a novel in a month.
What's the Narira Roll?
Oh.
Narira Roll.
Oh, yeah.
What is it?
Oh, yeah. How do you say it then? Smarty pants.
Well, I can't remember what the actual letters.
November.
It's just a jumble of letters that involve N's and W's.
November writing.
It takes place in November, doesn't it? I can't remember what it is either.
If you don't want to grow a mustache, you've got to write a book. I think that's how it works.
I've just tried to Google it, and I've got the Wikipedia page of a small town in South Africa. So I think I might have spelled that right. I might have got that wrong.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so I was thinking about that, because I was going to, you know, the book I had to review that John forced me into reviewing, the Take Your Pants Off, of using that format to replan my novel idea and use that as to blitz through it in that month, so we all do that.
Oh, yeah, perhaps we should have a go.
So that was my thing. I've not actually put pen to paper, but I have given some consideration to writing in the future.
Yeah, you've thought about it.
Which is kind of procrastinating, but in a constructive way.
NaNoWriMo is what it is.
Okay.
That's what I said.
National Novel Writing Month.
Right.
That's what literally what I said.
Okay, well, I think thinking about writing counts as writing. Thinking about writing in the future counts as writing, doesn't it?
Yes, so, we're the best.
Thinking about writing in November,
well done, us.
Whilst it's August, counts as writing. I think that counts as writing. All right, well, let's just make sure we come back next week with some words, shall we?
Yeah, yeah.
Gentlemen?
Yes. We've really let ourselves down.
But for now, John, let's talk about someone else's words.
Yeah, so I read Save the Cat, subtitled The Last Book on Screenwriting That You'll Ever Need.
Dr. Zeus.
By Blake Snyder.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I got to say, I think I found it really useful.
I'm going to be really interested to see how you review this, John, because it is a massively popular book that has probably had millions of reviews. You've got to bring something new to the party somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I did mention it before, didn't I, in another podcast without going into a lot of detail, but it's basically the rules of how to write a really good movie.
Right.
And he starts the book by explaining the title, because obviously the title is a bit weird.
Yeah.
And it's what he calls the scene in a film where we meet the hero and they do something like saving a cat that defines who they are and makes us, the audience, like them. So it's whatever sort of creates a connection with the audience. So the main character might might be a total loser. They might be like a hard-nosed drunk and, you know, really unpleasant. But that moment where they do something nice, they stop the bullies picking on a kid, or, you know, they give some money to somebody, or they, you know, that's the save the cat moment. And not every film has one. But he says that every film should have one.
I was trying to think of an example in my head, and I'm really struggling to nail one down. Did he give an example?
There's a few, isn't there, where like the main character goes into a shop and has a sort of jolly conversation with a shopkeeper on their way to work. Do you know what I mean? You know, that sort of, I'll owe you next time, Bill. Oh, yeah, no worries, Keith. And it shows you know, they're a nice person.
That's it, exactly. I did watch a film recently. But it was exactly that. I think it was Tom Cruise, and he has a little jolly conversation with the guy at the magazine stand.
There you go, yeah.
And it's totally pointless.
Yeah.
Was it that Tom Cruise film where he's a plucky underdog that's very attractive to women?
Slightly arrogant, yeah.
Yeah, but and at some point, do you mean you think, oh, he's a bit of an arse? But in the end, against all odds, he comes good. And
that's it. That's the one, yeah.
That Tom
Cruise
film.
Yeah, A Few Good Men, yeah. It was A Few Good Men. Well done, Tom. Well done.
I was talking about Top Gun, but yeah, that's fine.
Every film should have one. The example he uses is is it Sea of Love?
Did you actually read it?
Are you just reading the blurb off the back?
It's Sea of Love.
Are you reading it right now?
Is that even a film? I've not even heard of that.
It's a brilliant film. Sea of Love, Al Pacino.
Is that the one where Al Pacino, in like the second scene, he saves that cat?
Yeah. Hey, come over here, quick. The cat's on the road. Hey, cat, come here.
Is that one? And then he takes the cat and says,
say hello to my little friend.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, good film. is this a cat moment is just like the joining of the viewer to the main hero?
Yeah, it's basically, because it's a book full of like these little tips, these like little common sense tips, he uses Save the Cat as one of the main examples of just things that you've got to put in your film, things that just make a film better. And there's loads of them, especially at the end, he like lists a whole load of different like little things that you've got to get in or you must avoid. But yes, I think it's really useful. But the main thing that it does is teaches you how to beat out a film.
Yeah.
As in, you know, put up your little post-its or whatever on the wall and work it out scene by scene and structure your film.
So I was going to ask,
that's kind of the main thrust of it.
With all these bits, are they in order? So do they happen in the same order, these touch points that he has in here? Does it happen in the same order in every film, or kind of is it?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, there are obviously exceptions, and there's a couple that you can sort of swap around a little bit. But mainly, all the really good films that you can think of do absolutely fit, like 100%. And it is quite weird. And he does say, you know, one of the things you have to do as a writer, especially if you're obviously writing films, is that you just study films and just get really good at seeing the beats and noticing where they are and what leads up to them.
Do you think are there also some really bad films that do these things as well?
I reckon most films try to do it, because I think now it's such a sort of known formula that...
Yeah, exactly. The studio won't sign it off unless you have these things going on.
But it doesn't necessarily mean you've got it right. You know, there's definitely a way to do it, but it's still really easy to get everything wrong. There are so many things you can get wrong. I think that's one of the issues.
I want to know, what are the things that he said? You said there were some things that he said you shouldn't
do. Well, he talks about, for example, if your bad guys aren't working, if there's something wrong with the story, it's often one of a number of things. One will be that your bad guy isn't very bad. So make your bad guy badder is one of his things, if your story seems a bit weak.
Yeah. Kill the cat.
Kill the cat. Make sure your hero isn't inactive, which I think I've done in the past. Make sure they're really active. Make them initiate the action. Don't let them be dragged through the film, otherwise no one will care about them. Stuff like, remember that stories are about change, and with the exception of the bad guys, all your characters have to change during the course of your movie. You know, don't just have your main character change. And also, don't forget to increase the stakes as the movie goes on. Build up the intensity. You can't have the same sort of pace throughout. You've got to sort of build the speed of things happening, increase the threat and the near-death experiences and everything, and just sort of keep things winding up. So it's kind of stuff like that. And he goes into a bit of detail about it as well, and he sort of gives you tips and ways to get into it.
And is this very specifically screenplays, John, or is it like just sort of story elements?
It's films, yeah. It's primarily films. But what I was interested in is the sort of the structuring the story, because ultimately, you know, all stories are the same, whether it's a film or a book or whatever. Yeah. And I think certainly for certain kinds of books, especially if you're planning on them being quite commercial, because he's very commercially minded.
Well, yes.
Like, he does talk about money quite a lot, Blake Snyder.
Is this like rules to write a really, really good screenplay, or rules to write a screenplay that will sell? Does he sort of go into that distinction?
I think he would argue both.
Yeah.
I think he'd argue that one is the same, you know, they're the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and occasionally there are outliers, aren't there, where there are films that don't quite sort of follow all the rules entirely, but they just hit the mark, or they just get something right. And sometimes you get a bad film that, you know, does quite well at the box office. But basically, they're usually the same thing, aren't they? It'll be popular because it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what it's kind of about. It's about, if you want to make the most perfect, satisfying story that audiences will flock to and it'll make millions of dollars at the box office so that you can finally afford your big beachfront mansion in Malibu.
Yeah, why wouldn't you want that? Eh?
Yeah, well, exactly.
It's interesting what you're saying there about films being popular because they're good or because they fit this format.
It's interesting because Blake Snyder, he has a proper go at a couple of films that I really like, and talks about why they're crap. And he also, like, bigs up films that I think are maybe a bit crap. So it's interesting.
What films do you think are good that he didn't?
The films I really enjoy, what's his name? M. Night Shyamalan, or whatever his name is. His Signs. It's quite a weird film. It's a sort of cross-genre film. It's basically a family drama meets sci-fi sort of thing.
Yeah, I remember that one. I think that was the last one of his that I actually enjoyed. Is that the one where it's all about... these things are afraid of water or something.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it's actually a really nice film. It's really well written. It's really interesting. And it is much more of a family drama. It's almost like it's a family drama, but they just happen to be aliens.
Yeah.
You know, it's about...
It's a family drama where the mum gets horrifically crushed between a car and a tree. It's not
That's
really...
it, exactly.
Come on, kids. Let's sit down and watch this together.
Yeah. Although we did... We did gather the kids together and watch it with them, or force them to watch it. But I really liked it. It is a bit sort of mystical and a bit strange, but I thought that was really good. And also, he totally panned Memento as well.
Oh, yeah, I really like that.
Like early Christopher Nolan film.
Yeah, is that because everything happens in a bizarre order?
And that is a great idea for
a
film.
He doesn't like the fact that things happen out of order.
That would ruin his system, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't fit into any of his...
That was a great film.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a brilliant movie.
But he makes
the
point, have a look at the box office for both those films.
Well, I just had a quick look. Signs made nearly £500 million.
All right. It's done quite well then. What about Memento? Because he really slams that. He says that did absolutely crap. I suppose he's comparing it to very, very popular things. But
yeah, but wasn't that Nolan's, like, first film?
I think it was... Well, it was his breakthrough
went
film,
went on
wasn't
to
it?
Make... Yeah, yeah.
Thing is, though, are we just to judge films by how much they make at the box
office? Well, that's part of the problem.
It was like his first movie, and starring someone who was just out of Neighbours, pretty much, wasn't it? And then, you know, you can't compare that to the big, you know, blockbusters.
And it wasn't easy watching. Like, it wasn't popcorn watching, was it? It wasn't like you'd go to the cinema on a Saturday night and have a couple of beers and, you know.
No.
You really had to... pay attention. You had to work your way through.
No, after
it.
A couple of beers, that would be, yeah.
I think I got it from the video shop.
Yeah, I think I might have done.
Dates it a little bit. Yeah.
Memento made $40 million off a $9 million budget.
All right.
So that's more than I've...
profit.
That's more than I've made.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But yeah, he is definitely about the money, because the examples he uses are Legally Blonde. He's bigging that one up. And also Miss Congeniality as well. They're the examples.
Well, they're good films also.
I haven't seen either of them, but I believe they're quite popular.
I think they are. I think they did quite well, to be fair. Yeah, so it's interesting. It's interesting because I think you can put a little question mark on it. But overall, I think it's a good thing to bear in mind. And I like doing the beatboard thing. Do you want to know roughly how to create a beatboard, just so you got it in your head?
Yes, please.
So basically, what you do is you buy a load of index cards and a pack of pens, and you start sticking them up on your board, on your wall. And each card is basically a scene of your film. And your film should divide into four roughly equal parts. So by the end, you'll have about 10 scene cards along the top for Act 1. And that takes you to exactly 25 pages of your script, ideally. And then you have 10 scenes running under that, which is the first half of the second act, taking you to 55 pages. And then 10 more, which is the second half of the second act, running to 85 pages. And then the last 10 cards, which will comprise the third act and represents the full 110 pages of the script. So you can see how fixed it is. It's like it is properly like a writing by numbers.
Is this the book where he's very prescriptive about what has to happen on each page?
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So it's very fixed, except the scope for freedom within that really confined space. I think that's the sort of magic of, you know, writing a movie in a way.
Yeah.
That's the space within you having a bit of fun.
It's kind of a good safety net, though, isn't it? So you know everything's in the right place.
It is. That's exactly.
And if you've done it properly,
yeah, that's
it should
exactly
work.
What it is.
There's no other. So therefore, you can tell what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
If it's not working.
That's
if it
right.
Doesn't
exactly.
Work when you've, yeah. If
and you know
hit
what's
that
missing.
Formula and it still doesn't work, it's because you're crap.
You're a crap idea.
Yeah.
Because he's a big one on log lines as well. It's like, get your log line right, otherwise you're not going anywhere. You don't have a film yet if you don't have a log line.
I think we're all converts on that now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Really.
Episode 10, by the way, if you want to know what we're talking about.
Yeah, for log lines and John's weird tree story that he never got around to doing, even though he promised.
I'm working on it. I am working on it.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Oh, you finished
that's
it?
That's good.
Oh, no, I finished the thing. I was going to record it. I'm working on the
right,
recording.
Right.
It's taking me longer than I meant it to.
Is it tricky getting the voice talent, getting the tree?
It's really hard to persuade a fucking tree to talk.
Yeah, well,
this time of year as well. It's coming to the end of the season, isn't
yeah.
it? So they've,
I might start again in busy. Spring. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you get them all up on your wall and then you can see the structure of your story.
Yeah.
And I started doing it for the book that I've started writing. But I'm finding it really quite lovely putting up the scenes and seeing how it works. I've never done that before.
Yeah.
And I can see it being quite helpful. I haven't finished that bit of it yet, but...
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll keep going.
So, what marks out of 10 would you give the cat book then, John?
Well, to keep it simple for you, Dave, I've used a much more basic 5-star scoring system.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I just thought 10 was... I thought 10 confused you a bit, so I thought, let's just keep it simple.
So what's...
you know,
what, 5 star. High, 1 low?
Correct, yeah.
Just establishing the baseline.
Oh, you've come on so much, Dave.
Exactly, I've been reading. Really I've been reading up.
Really, well done, well done.
I've done 5 categories. I've scored them out of 5, and then I've divided the result by 5 to find the total. Kept it very simple.
Hang on a minute, that's gone. It's gone the other way
really
now.
Kept it really simple. Readability, insight, freshness, use of examples, usefulness. They're my categories. 5, 4, 4, 4, 5.
A minute.
It's a straight 4.4 out of 5.
I don't know how anyone else feels, but I think you may have gone through those scores quite quickly to the point that I don't know what was...
They were almost meaningless.
Yeah.
I felt that was like the credits at the end of an American sitcom, just sort of flashing quickly over the screen.
Yeah.
You liked it though, John.
I did like it a lot. I feel
you
like
I gave it 4.4 out of 5, Dave. You don't get it, do you still? He did like it.
He went through it too quickly.
4.4 stars.
He did it too quick.
That is a very good score, Dave. That is a really good score.
It is, isn't it? That's quite good. That's 8.8 out of 10, that, isn't it?
I think it's one of those things with that book, isn't it? You kind of hate it for how prescriptive
it
is.
You almost don't want to read
anymore. But at the same time, it's like that's such a comfort. That's such a...
Have you tried, John, watching a film since reading the book and sort of trying to mark out?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so that happens on this like 25 minutes in, that should correspond to the 25th page.
Yeah, and after reading the book, it's really obvious where they are as well.
Is
it's quite
it?
Weird.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, we went to see Free Guy the other day, you know, the Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's the kind of film, because it's all quite silly and quite fun, that you're not so emotionally involved in it that it totally, you know, drags you away. And it's in films like that, it's really obvious where everything is. But I think with things that are a bit more like, a bit more dark and emotional.
Did you take the book to the cinema and just sit there ticking?
Yeah, And I keep shouting out as well, Catalyst!
Oh, that's good for the other people. Yeah, it's good for the other people isn't it?
It is. It's good for them to learn.
That's really helpful. Yeah. Really kind.
Yeah. A little system where whenever something comes off, you tick it off the list, you can eat one of your pick and mix or something like that.
Yeah. No, I didn't do that. I didn't shout. Midpoint!
I like the fact that you think... that we think you're as much of a wanker that you would do that, that you feel the need to say that you absolutely didn't do that.
Well, I might sometimes whisper it.
Under your breath.
Do you sort of just nudge Katie?
Occasionally.
Midpoint. Yeah.
So I was gonna do like the first act. I was going to break it down for you. It's very short.
Which act?
Do you want me to do that?
First act of what? Hey?
And then give you a quick quiz. The first act of all films, I suppose.
Oh, just a... Okay.
Oh, okay.
See.
Cool, yeah.
Right. Yeah, all right.
Because Blake Snyder's got 15 beats, and here are the first... Right. What is it? Four, five. Five. So, opening image. That's number one. That sets the tone, gives you, like, the first impression
Makes
of the
sense.
Film, gives you an immediate insight into the world. That's the, you know, it's literally like
this. Is
this
literally the first thing that you see?
The absolute first thing you see, and that should be, that's obviously really important, isn't it? Because it sets everything up. And its opposite number is the final image at the end. It should be totally opposite.
Yep.
So it's like the world has shifted. Okay, that's your first one. Second beat.
I'm trying to think of all these. I'm trying to think of a... So I'm thinking of Die Hard here.
Ooh, what's the opening?
I've used that as my...
What's the opening? It's all Christmassy, isn't it?
I think so,
yeah. Is it the outside of the building?
The outside of the building that's completely intact and hasn't been destroyed.
Yeah. So the final shot is the smoke pouring out of it and all that sort of stuff.
So the initial shot is quite isolated, isn't it? It's like in the middle of nowhere sort of thing. And there's no one out because it's Christmas. And it's dead quiet. Whereas at the end, the building's on fire, falling to bits. And the entire front is full of police and ambulance. Yeah. And you know, that works.
It does. Yeah, they should mirror each other. If you think about Star Wars as well, they start and finish with the same shot almost. But obviously a lot has happened in between. All right, so page five, state the theme. Theme stated. So somewhere in the first five pages, we should have one of the characters usually state the theme of the movie, but in a subtle way, ideally. Not
this
say,
is the theme!
The theme of the meal! Yeah. Yeah.
I hope no terrorists turn up to our Christmas party this year. That kind of thing.
But what's the film actually about? You know, the actual theme of the film needs to, in some way, come to light. Up to page 10 is the setup, obviously. It's like it's where you plant all the A story characters. So you got to basically introduce everyone who's important to the A story.
Yeah.
Tell us what all the heroes' issues are as well. What needs fixing about the hero? Yeah. What's up with them? Page 12, precisely, is the catalyst. That's the moment that begins to turn the character's world upside down. So it's like the letter from the long-lost aunt or the... You know, a telephone call that announces the death of some family member or whatever. Someone announcing they want a divorce. That's the thing that sparks the adventure. And then page 12 to 25 is somewhere in there is the debate. This is when the main character wonders if they should answer the call of adventure. Should they do it?
Yeah.
Seems a little bit risky, seems a little bit dangerous.
Do I go and get help or do I save everyone single-handed?
Doesn't really work, my die-hard theory.
Well,
that,
I don't know,
really,
though, because he's, you know...
Does he not just... He's just up for it full stop.
There'll be a point, though, where he's like...
He debates how to do it, though.
Although, does he initially try and call the police in or something?
I think
then
so,
they're
yeah.
useless, so he has no option.
Yeah.
He does, because he calls the cop.
Yeah.
Eating his donuts, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, page 25, and it's got to be page 25. Don't mess with it. That's the answer to the debate, and that's obviously yes.
I believe the answer is yippee-ki-yay,
motherfucker. Yeah, something big happens.
Technically.
I think it is.
And that's when we leave the old world order behind and we enter a new and exciting world that's the total like opposite, the flip to the one that the character was comfortable in. But that was the world that was like keeping them floored. And page 25 is when we suddenly flip into this new place. So there you go. So I've got a quick quiz. Name a famous film we've all seen, not Die Hard.
Toy Story.
Toy Story, okay.
Toy Story.
So in Toy Story... in that film, where's the break into Act 2, i.e. when the big flip happens? We leave the old world order behind and we enter a new and exciting
when
world.
When Woody gets pushed out of the window to follow Buzz, isn't it?
That's it. It's when
isn't it?
That's it. It's when he... But he decides to go, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He has a debate with himself about whether he should go.
He's being usurped by
Buzz. That's right.
Buzz.
But he does. He ends up jumping on the car.
No. He gets
car.
Thrown out, doesn't he, by Mr. Potato Head.
Does he?
You know that bit where he said, pick a film we all know?
Yeah,
maybe
really,
we don't
really
know
well.
That as well.
Buzz accidentally gets knocked out, and then
anyway,
Woody gets thrown.
So,
out.
What would you say? Where's the break into Act Two then? When does the world flip?
They're moving house, aren't they?
Yeah, it's when they leave the house and they go out on the road.
It's when Woody decides to actively get involved in getting Buzz back. I think.
Yeah,
maybe for the wrong reasons to start with.
Yeah,
because he doesn't want to lose his friends, but then eventually, obviously, yeah, there you go.
Oh, was that the quiz?
That was the quiz. It's over. Well done.
Right, so go. I thought there was more to come then, John.
I'm glad there's not. Yeah.
Did we win? Do we get? Is there a prize?
I'm going to send you both a Failing Writers podcast T-shirt.
Well, to be fair, you were supposed to have done that several weeks ago, John. As I recall.
Weeks ago.
I was only thinking
today. I packaged
today.
Them up today. They're all ready to go. I'm going to take them to the post office
Brilliant.
Tomorrow.
So our prize for getting the quiz right is something that we should have had already. Great.
Hey, well done.
Well, thanks. So, yeah.
Recommend it anyway. Cool. Recommend it.
So that's Save the Cat by Blake Snyder. 4.4 out of 5, John Rand recommends.
That's a John Rand recommendation.
And that, John, was a fucking brilliant review. Mm.
Is there any need for that language, then?
Well, that's a very good question, Tom.
as we segue seamlessly into other subjects.
I thought that was quite clever.
You twat.
So we were going to talk about swearing, weren't we?
Yeah.
25. 24.
You're listening to the Failing Writers Podcast, and that sound you can hear is the countdown to some pretty horrific swearing. So if you are averse to a cuss word or offended by explicit language, be it blasphemy, sexual references, offensive words for the strange dangly parts or the dark forbidding orifices of the human body, then please stop listening now, before the countdown ends. Because this section of the show is literally packed with the most disgusting language that has ever been broadcast. So prepare yourself. Right, here it comes. Are you ready?
One.
Tits, bum, cock and piss, bloody bugger shit, wank arsehole, fuck nugget, donkey bollocks, big baggages, twatty little bitch, cock womble, bastard wanker, cunt of the north, penis breath, eat my schlong. If you're offended by these words, please don't listen to this song. Hey, I should have said that at the beginning, shouldn't I? Oh, sugar lumps.
Tommy found an article about how the use of certain swear words is changing. Is that right?
I thought it was like the FTSE index of swear words over time, wasn't it? Kind of like the values of them going up and down.
Yeah.
The FTSE index.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. And it was saying how, and this upset me a little bit actually, how bloody is slipping down the ranks.
Yeah, because that's a favourite of yours, that.
It's such a nice, rounded, lovely, warm swear word,
isn't
it? It
is, and it doesn't get you into too much trouble as well.
I always thought that's the swear word that everyone's allowed to say. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's why it's slipping down. Maybe it's losing its teeth.
Yeah, maybe.
Because originally, bloody started, didn't it? It's a blasphemous.
Yeah, like blood of God.
Is it?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, is it now?
A lot of them are, Dave.
Yeah.
A lot of ones that you think are okay are not okay.
Yeah, a lot of them have different meanings.
I remember when we were doing radio ads years ago, there used to be a list from the clearance people.
That's right, yeah, things you couldn't say.
And it had some ones on, you were like, what?
Like what?
Why can't you say bird?
Really?
Oh, I remember that one, yeah.
You can't say bird. Do you know why, John?
No, I don't.
It's rhyming slang, isn't it?
Cockney rhyming slang.
Yeah.
For work.
The Berkshire Hunt.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
God.
But then most of them are. They come from, they're either substituted or from a, do you know what I mean? So it's like you just, can I say pillock? I don't know if it was, is that one means that, I don't know.
I feel like someone's post-rationalised the Berkshire Hunt.
No, that's.
I feel like that doesn't really work.
I don't know, but I remember reading that many, many years ago, yeah. I wonder if there's a sort of thing coming where we sort of get told we're not allowed to say certain words because of sort of, the sort of hidden etymology of it. Who knows?
Yeah, I think there's all kinds of stuff
probably,
like floating around.
Probably saying all kinds of dodgy stuff.
Things like, even words like idiot and stuff that come from a slightly dark place.
Mm-hmm.
But then things always change over time. Johnny, you'll know this with your penchant for a bit of Mr. Shakespeare. like when in Shakespeare, there's a bit where he calls someone naughty.
Yeah.
And in Elizabethan England, that is pretty much the worst thing that you could say to someone.
Was it now?
Because it meant of basically calling them godless and
as in
soulless.
Lacking naught.
Yeah. Worth nothing. You're not, like literally nothing.
Yeah.
Completely meaningless and devoid
of. It's kind of changed its meaning over time.
I might take massive offence at that the next time somebody says it. In my vicinity, someone says naughty anywhere near me, I'm just going to lose
just
it.
Just break down into, oh no!
Yeah.
Right. Maybe throw in a bit of Shakespearean English in there for dramatic effect as well.
Thou twat. Don't say that to me.
Apparently my granddad had a great turn of swearing. Unfortunately he died when I was very young, so I never heard him get to say it live. My mum's dad. He used to just have basically one swear word that he'd use all the time. But that swear word was issy pissy shitty arseoli. It's just fantastic, isn't it?
Because it's made all those words sound quite sweet.
But at the same time, you feel like it's got a good rhythm, hasn't it? Like a little Gatling gun of swearing just out of you.
It's funny how if you put the letter Y on anything, it makes it sound quite sweet.
Yeah, it can take the edge.
It,
sound
quite nice. It also sounds like the sort of thing that someone might say to try to, like, as a sort of substitute for swearing, but actually contains actual swear words.
It's literally just full of swearing. But then we asked on Twitter, didn't we?
We did.
About what people think about using swearing in their writing and also how they like or don't like to consume it in their reading. Because it is a bit of a weird one, that. I remember, obviously, you know, I'm a big reader, get through a lot of books.
Yeah.
But on the odd occasion I've actually read a fiction book, sometimes it sticks out. You know when you meet someone who's not a sweary type? Yeah. And they put and they swear, and they've got that little head wobble as they do it, as if they've kind of really pushed the boat out. Yeah, shit. And it just sounds like completely alien to them. There's some books you read where
that doesn't sound right.
It's almost like you feel like the author doesn't swear, and they're just kind of like
feels a bit awkward.
They haven't quite used it right.
Peter turned the corner and said, "Fuck," and you're like, "Whoa!" And he's like, it's like. Whereas there's other ones that it's just like, it's just part of the fabric and it feels completely
just, as
right.
As you're saying this, I've just had a weird flashback to being a kid and a couple of sort of, we must have been about 7, 8, 9, and we decided to make a den in our garden shed and like formed a little club. And I remember saying to this one kid who never used to swear, like, I reckon this could be our sort of secret area. Here, you can just say what you want and you're allowed to swear completely. And he went, yeah, bloody shit.
I bet that.
Yeah, let it all out, mate.
The happiest day of his life.
Yeah. Oh, you bloody. Oh.
It is amazing how some people get offended, though. Like, I don't know, you'd sort of assume that most people hear some swearing in their lives.
Yeah.
And I was reading an article from a writer called Amy Peppel about how she started to doubt herself. She got a proper, like, angry letter from one of her readers for using the word asshole too much in a novel.
Because it should be arsehole. Is that why?
Because it should be arsehole.
I agree with that.
That's fair enough, I think.
But I was thinking, you know, it's weird, though, because as a writer, you're not normally actively setting out to offend people. So I imagine that's quite upsetting to get a letter from someone just really laying into you for using that word.
Yeah.
It's just a bit confusing because it's always going to be used in context of a character, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, it's context of character and situation, though, isn't it?
Always. Either in direct speech or very close description.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah. But people, obviously, people come from different places and different communities and stuff. And this woman actually wrote one of the comments in her letter to the writer was... no teenager would ever use the F word.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I was thinking, where does this woman live? I want to go and live there. It sounds like some sort of little paradise. You know, it's like bluebirds landing on her head and feeding deer.
But then if that comes, you know, if you're talking about America or whatever, and that's from one of these Mormon communities
maybe.
Do you mean like a completely different cultural community where it is just not acceptable, then... That could be true in their reality, couldn't it?
Yeah, but if that's the case, and you don't ever swear, and you don't like swearing, and you read a book that's got a swear word in it, just put it down. Do you know what I mean? Why would you write a letter? Yeah.
Yeah, no one's forcing you to read it.
I read
if you were that writer, would you be tempted to write a letter back?
I think
a
I
really
would.
Swear-y
say,
one.
Yeah. How the hell do you know that there are 14 arseholes in this book if you were so offended by the first one?
Yeah, she clearly loved it, didn't
just
she?
Just titillated by it. I had to go through and count them. But it's true, though. It's the sort of thing that does stick out if it's used wrong, I think. Like you said, Tom, sometimes it jars. And because we also asked, didn't we, about sort of favourite swear words, and there's a lot of sort of joined together sort of created swear words that can be quite funny in some situations, but in other situations seem totally forced and don't work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So we asked, here we go, a few things that we had back on Twitter when we asked about the favourite creative swears. So there's a guy called Jack Levers who said arse clown.
No, he said ass clown.
Yeah. He said, of course, yeah, it's all about the accent.
See, now that's the thing, arse clown just sounds... that doesn't work, does it?
ass
clown.
Ass clown.
You're an ass clown.
You're an ass clown. ass clown. That's quite a good one.
Quite like ass clown.
Lee Grant said thunder cunt.
Very rude, isn't
that it? That is
which
a good one.
Attributed to Emma Kennedy. Which
what kind of man does
good.
That? What kind of man
very
says
rude.
Thunder cunt but then goes, oh, I didn't say it though, really.
It was someone else.
Someone else.
Exactly.
It wasn't me. I didn't swear.
I heard a big girl say it. But do you know what I mean? Like, there, if you... Like, which is a nice sort of funny turn of phrase, but if you're reading that in a book from the wrong character, it can seem utterly contrived and forced.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If someone's in a really heated moment and they suddenly say something like, you're a cock-juggling thunder cunt, it's not the sort of thing that would just spring out.
No, but it's, if it fits
out,
in
you
with
know?
The character, if you have cast Hugh Grant in your film, do you know what I mean? Kind of, you can do it, can't you? That's half the point about the right place, the right time.
Yeah.
I remember once being in the creative office, actually, at Galaxy, and me and Gareth were trying to come up with new swear words.
What, like totally new words?
Just, yeah, you know, it's like using the kind of the...
Brand new. What did you come up with?
I think the nearest we came was cockfister.
That's quite nasty.
The best we could do at the time.
Baird, you were quite fond of an occasional cockwomble, weren't you, at one stage? Seem to remember.
Cockknocker.
Cockknocker, that's it.
Yeah.
I knew it was something.
Yeah. I used to quite like one of them.
Cockknocker. Used to come out occasionally.
Yeah.
Do you think you can just put any half swear word with another word and it just sounds, comes up with a haha, mildly humorous.
I think it does, because...
It does
like you just
work.
Say wank turtle and everyone goes, yeah, that works.
Yeah. There's another one from the Twitter feed. Was A.B. Finlayson's Waffle Bollocks, which is nice, isn't it? That's a nice combination.
Do you know what I like about that is I think you can kind of, you know exactly what it is.
Yeah, that is nice.
You can kind of fit bollocks. It. You can't describe it in itself, but you know what it is.
But also, like, how could anyone be offended if you say Waffle Bollocks? I don't think, you know what I mean? I think it takes the edge off, doesn't it?
It does take the edge off, you're right. My son, my youngest son, speaking of, we were talking about teenagers before, but he has a funny thing that he started saying. He doesn't really want to swear a lot because he's a good kid.
Yeah.
But he sort of comes up with his own fake swears.
Oh.
But unfortunately, sometimes he gets it a bit wrong. Like one of his favourites is fudging fuckernickel. But as I've pointed out, he's not really successfully dodged the swear there, no. Joel.
Yeah.
In fact, if anything, you probably just highlighted it.
Yeah, exactly. I just imagine it's the sort of word that if you tried to beep it, you'd beep the fudge off the beginning and just hit the hit the fuck.
Just hit the fucking nickel. It's nice though, I've started using
it. I'm a big fan of, I read a lot of sort of comic books, and there's a lot of sort of made up swear words that are in those where they've got, you know, the character would absolutely be the sort of character that would swear, but there's a lot of kids are going to read this, so you can't actually say the real swear word. So I read a lot of, I used to read a lot of 2000 AD and Judge Dredd, and his sort of big catchphrase was drock. He would say drock you drocking drocker. he wouldn't say that, but you know. But that was the sort of fuck replacement in Judge Dredd's world was drock. And there's a few, sneck was another good one. I quite like sneck. That feels like it should be a swear.
Yeah, it's got that kind of, it sounds like it's got some Anglo-Saxon roots in that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Katie
says, gee whiz. She doesn't go the full Jesus.
My mum used to say sugar lumps quite a lot. Sugar lumps!
See, I always think it's a bit weird, isn't it, with the fake ones. I get it, but it is just a bit weird because it is, that's, you're still saying the same thing.
It's
If you feckin' gee whiz sugar lumps, then we know what you're doing.
Well, I think that's the thing, isn't it?
So what's the...
Well, if there's kids around.
It's a way of getting around it, isn't it? You know?
There's done studies where swearing, because it's in a different part of your brain, If you're in pain, swearing relieves the pain.
No, really?
I read that, yes. Yeah,
that
yeah, yeah.
Feels
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, they did it. They actually did an experiment on TV with Brian Blessed.
Didn't they make him put his hand in some cold water or something like that? Yeah.
It's freezing cold water. And the first time they didn't let him swear, and the second time they did let him swear. And let me tell you, that man can swear.
Yeah.
That does feel right, doesn't it? It does. Sometimes you've just got to.
Yeah.
It does have its uses.
So the question is whether, if your hand was in frozen water, whether just saying waffle bollocks...
No, it's actually, not enough.
It doesn't feel like it would do any good, does it?
Do you know what?
Rather than like giving it a full...
I think I also remember reading...
Pissy, shitty arseholes.
I remember reading as well that it was a way of catching spies, because it's really difficult. if you're in like extreme pain... People do swear, but it's really difficult not to swear in your own language.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I mean, shit, that hurts. That kind of thing.
Yeah, that old chestnut. Yeah. Just had to catch someone out.
Is it okay to swear in different languages
if you're a spy
in front of the kids? That'd be a good way around it, wouldn't it?
I think
maybe.
I may.
I don't know. Yeah, but
done that before.
I might go and look it up then.
That's good. That's educational. That's all right. John, what was your favourite off the Twitter feed from what people said?
Well, it has to be Chicken McBastard.
Oh, yes.
I can't remember. Actually, I haven't got it here. Who said Chicken McBastard? That was brilliant.
Garrison the Barbarian Kelly.
Yeah, love that. It's just everything you need.
That's a good under the breath one, that, isn't
it? Yeah. You can say that slowly as well, can't you? Chicken McBastard.
Really lean on the start of the syllables. That's the sign of a good swear word.
I can imagine Sean Bean ordering one.
Chicken McBastard.
Chicken McBastard.
And it's always good, the swear words where you can slip a little another word in the middle, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, splitting a word in half and shoving a fucking in the middle.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we come to the conclusion that swearing is flipping brilliant. And people who don't like it should...
Fudge off. Yeah.
And, speaking of that, do you remember there was a brilliant advert for the Advertising Standards Authority? God, it must have been in the 90s or something like that, where they had this, like, scene. It was like a scene out of The Bill, like police cars on a bridge apprehending a criminal. But all the dialogue was done
without
swearing.
Yeah.
But it really needed swearing.
Yeah.
And he's like, put his hands behind his back. Ah, oh, you're flipping hurting me, kind of thing.
Because I love the sort of TV edits of 18 movies. There's a brilliant TV edit of RoboCop, which I still love to this day, where he says things like, forget you, obviously, fuck you. And they sort of bleeped out. And it's the sort of film where people's heads are getting blown off and fingers are melting and all that sort of stuff. But they replace arsehole with airhead.
It's just, you imagine, can't you, in the edit suite for the thing. Right, Peter, you're going to need to take that back. Just after there, where the woman gets stabbed and gutted, there. You know when her gut's falling out, there. And he gets his eyeball skewered out. He says, shit, so we need to get rid of that. It is a bit weird.
I wonder who used to get the job, because I remember films where you'd get someone saying, oh, go blow it out your kazoo! and it would just be really badly done. It must have been a great job dubbing the fake swear words on movies. But I think the answer is, I think we've nailed it, haven't we, really? It's fine, as long as it's fitting to character and context.
Yeah, quite a boring answer, really, in a way, isn't it?
It's proper.
Middle of the road. Probably all right, as long as you do it sensibly.
I was hoping, when we asked the question on Twitter, I was hoping that people would come back with some really surprising answers, but actually everyone was really sensible and just said stuff like, I think it's fine, as long as it fits the story and the character.
Because it is the sort of thing that people are quite a polarizing thing, isn't it? Because some people are just absolutely, no, you can't do that at all. I'd like to, if you feel that way, please get in touch.
So if you feel that way, fuck off and don't listen.
Yeah.
You can't worry about offending the odd person, can you?
I can't.
It's like all the best all the best art offends some of the time.
Yeah, you know? not necessarily intentionally, but there's...
No, exactly.
Yeah, you can't hide people are allowed to be offended. I think there's a little bit missing at the minute, isn't there, in the world, that where people think they've got a right not to be offended.
Yeah. And you can read Chaucer. You know, he was bandying around the word arse back in the 1300s.
Oh, here we go, Dave. Nearly got through without John bringing up some obscure literature.
It's always good. Hang on a minute.
You got Shakespeare
Oh, I did, you got me there.
That out with the Die Hard.
That was naughty of me, wasn't it?
But there is a long and illustrious history of rude words in the English language, and I don't think we should just start, start pandering to these these people who can't take a
In fact, there's a brilliant clip. I can't remember where it's from, but it's about how brilliant the word fuck is, and we should probably finish the show with that, I think.
Perhaps one of the most interesting words in the English language today is the word fuck. Out of all of the English words that begin with the letter F, fuck is the only word that is referred to as the F word. It's the one magical word. Just by its sound can describe pain, pleasure, hate, and love. Fuck, as most words in the English language, is derived from German, the word frichen, which means to strike. In English, fuck falls into many grammatical categories. As a transitive verb, for instance, John fucked Shirley. As an intransitive verb, Shirley fucks. Its meaning's not always sexual. It can be used as an adjective, such as John's doing all the fucking work. As part of an adverb, Shirley talks too fucking much. As an adverb enhancing an adjective, Shirley is fucking beautiful. As a noun, I don't give a fuck. As part of a word, abso-fucking-lutely, or in-fucking-credible. And, as almost every word in a sentence, fuck the fucking fuckers. As you must realize, there aren't too many words with the versatility of fuck, as in these examples describing situations such as fraud. I got fucked at the used car lot. Dismay. Aw, fuck it. Trouble. I guess I'm really fucked now. Aggression. Don't fuck with me, buddy. Difficulty. I don't understand this fucking question. Inquiry. Who the fuck was that? Dissatisfaction. I don't like what the fuck is going on here. Incompetence. He's a fuck off. Dismissal. Why don't you go outside and play hide and go fuck yourself? I'm sure you can think of many more examples. With all of these multi-purpose applications, how can anyone be offended when you use the word? We say, use this unique, flexible word more often in your daily speech. It will identify the quality of your character immediately. Say it loudly and proudly. Fuck you!
So next week...
Next week we've got another interview.
Yeah, something a bit more savoury next week, I think, isn't it? Sunday Times bestseller, Richard and Judy Book Club, aficionado. I don't know what
you get called.
What's the word?
Richard and Judy sticker on the front as
Yeah. It's Gillian McAllister, author of That Night.
Yep, her latest book.
Which is keeping us on the edges of our seats.
Have you tried putting it on the bookcase, Dave, rather than leaving it in the seat behind you?
I finished.
Maybe that's better. John's finished it, so he's sat back in the chair. I'm still on the edge of my seat.
Somewhere else, mate, or sit on a different chair.
Just sit on the floor, perhaps. Might be easier. But yeah, she's coming to have a chat with us next week. That'll be great. Do you reckon she swears a lot?
It doesn't seem like a sweary Mary to me.
I think she'll have a little.
It's difficult to tell, isn't it, these days?
Let's find out. But until then,
we're very much open to more swear words. If anyone wants to drop us any more unique swear words,
send those through to us on Twitter or at failingwriterspodcast@gmail.com. We always like to open emails.
Yeah, we don't get many. So
no, it's a wonderful thing. So please get in touch. But otherwise, tune in for the Gillian McAllister interview next week.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?
Go on, Birdie.
So, next week, though, we've got something a bit more savoury, haven't we? We've got another interview coming up.
We have, yeah.
Sorry.
So, next week, though, we've got something a bit more...